We've been moving through different elements of poetry, talked just in generalities about poetry. We took a look at simile and metaphor, which are examples of figures of speech, making a comparison between two things that are as unlike as possible. So if you call somebody a snake in the grass, you call somebody a real sheep, we understand that there's a some kind of a comparison being made, even though these are two very different things. We also took a look at symbolism, talked about people as symbols, actions as symbols, objects as symbols, and looked at it in the Bible. Today we want to take a look at allusions, and we'll see how far we can get. I want to look at apostrophe as well, and personification, and hyperbole. Those would be four other devices that a poet often uses. And these are not restricted to poetry either. They're used in a lot of different aspects of literature. So let's pick up allusion. That's A-L-L-U-S-I-O-N, not illusion, but allusion. I think about the Far Side. I don't know if some of you have ever read those comics. I don't even like to call them comics, but by Larson, Gary Larson. Hilarious stuff, but many allusions are being made there to the Old West, to different social customs, to history. It's hard to describe them on an MP3, so usually I bring some of them into the class and share them with people there. Popular culture. We have all sorts of allusions in popular culture. Have you ever heard anybody say something like this? Now I know how Custer felt. Well, Americans know the story of George Armstrong Custer and his overweening pride and where it got him when he eventually got over 200 of his soldiers killed. How about an Achilles heel? Somebody having an Achilles heel. How about the patience of Job? Now, when we looked at Job, we talked about that actually being a pretty poor reference, pretty bad allusion, because Job is not patient. He's upset at God, but it's okay. It's in our language, so we say the patience of Job. How about this? Somebody says, he's another Huck Finn. Well, we know, at least I hope a lot of us know the story of Huck Finn, so we can already anticipate what this person is like. How about this one? That person is just a Puritan. Or that's a puritanical way of doing things. Or that's a puritanical thought. Well, if you know Puritans, you know these are put-downs on Puritans. Unfair, I might add, but they are put-downs, and making a comparison there. How about this? Another Sodom and Gomorrah. We know that from the Bible, don't we? He met his Waterloo. Okay, if we know that famous battle of history, we know how final it was for Napoleon. Here's another one. She saw the handwriting on the wall. That's from the Bible too, isn't it? From the book of Daniel. Here's another one. He eats like Garfield. I assume you've all seen comics of Garfield eating. He just simply picks up his bowl, opens his mouth, and tosses the entire contents down. So these things are allusions. Now, what do they do? What's the value of an allusion? Well, I hope you can tell that they are extremely rich and they're extremely dense. In other words, by just saying, I know how Custer felt, I have used one word, Custer. That one word allows the poet to focus a lot of information, a lot of emotional content into that one word. But you can think of so much with that word Custer. You can think of the American West. You can think of romanticism associated with the West clashing with reality. In other words, real people died that day. It was not very romantic to ride around on horseback back then if your final end was going to be dying on a hillside full of arrows. What else does Custer associate, or we associate with Custer? Pride, stupidity, the loss of the West for the Native Americans, the clash of cultures, the way a more modern culture tends to crush an older, almost Stone Age kind of culture. So these things all come out of I know how Custer felt. Let me as a way of thinking about this, I took something off the internet, which was AP. you know, those tests and all. AP English Illusions. These are illusions that the test people expect advanced placement classes, advanced placement students to understand. And they come from different areas of life. Illusions can come from literature. They certainly can come from the Bible. We'll have some examples here in a minute. They can come from our modern culture. That's why I gave you the Garfield one. They can come from mythology. I mentioned the one, Achilles' heel. They can come from our history, which is why I mentioned Custer. And I forgot what the other one was that I mentioned. Seemed like I did another one from history. Waterloo. Right, so there's another example from history. So there's no real way to teach people to get good at illusions. Frankly, it just requires more reading. But let me share some with you. Think about how many of these have come into our language. I'm taking, these are just alphabetized on the website. These are mythology, right? One area, mythology illusions. Apollo. Well, there's no accident that the American space program named one of its series of missions after Apollo. Cupid. Eros. We get erotic from that, don't we? Helen of Troy. Edgar Allan Poe writes a poem to Helen. Now, he didn't choose her by accident. He came up with her because she was not only an illusion, but can you see her as symbolic? Hercules. We talk about a Herculean task that somebody has to do. Mercurial. Somebody who's mercurial. It's named after Mercury's. Narcissism. Somebody who is a narcissist. I'm not defining these, by the way. I don't want to take the time to do that, but I just want you to think about how many of these have come into our language as sometimes adjectives, sometimes as nouns, but they are references to a mythological past. Odyssey. Honda makes a minivan called the Odyssey. That's not by accident. It's an attempt to connect somehow to this past. Olympian. Pandora's Box. Phoenix. We have a city in Arizona, for heaven's sakes. Phoenix. Promethean. Pyrrhic Victory. P-Y-R-R-H-I-C. Pyrrhic Victory. Tantalize. Comes from a king, Tantalus. Titanic. Well, that could be a historical illusion, couldn't it? But it's also a reference to mythology. Volcanoes come from the word Vulcan. So there's one area, right? A lot of illusions coming from mythology. Let's take another look, a second area, illusions from literature. Plenty of illusions from there. Again, I'm just going to give you some, not going to go into the explanation of them. If you don't recognize them, that's a challenge, isn't it? Probably need to get some more reading in. Cinderella, Don Juan, Don Quixote, Falstaffian, Frankenstein. Some of these are more familiar than others, aren't they? Galahad. Jekyll and Hyde. Scrooge. Simon Legree. Uncle Tom. That's a real negative comment an African American can give to another, and would help to know where that came from in literature. Walter Mitty. A Yahoo. All right, so there's some allusions to famous literature. I mentioned the Bible is a source of some, and we're going to spend a little bit more time on that, but let me just give you some. You've already encountered these people, but how many of them have worked their way into a lot of our language today? Cain and Abel, Goliath, the Good Samaritan, the handwriting on the wall. I already mentioned that one. Ishmael. Moby Dick starts with three words. Call me Ishmael. Well, if you know the story of Ishmael, you're already prepared for the kind of person that you're going to encounter. Jacob, Job, Jonah. How about Judas? Jezebel, Manna, original sin, or the fall, the prodigal son, Samson and Delilah, scapegoat. That was actually something from the Bible. We don't think of it from the Bible, but it was. Sodom and Gomorrah, I mentioned that. Solomon. So there's just some examples from the Bible. How about history? Attila. How about Berserk? Casanova. Chauvinist. Donnybrook. El Dorado. Horatio Alger, Machiavellian, Marathon, McCarthyism, Shanghai. Of course, we know that's a city, but there's something going on in history. Spartan, Uncle Sam, Utopia, Waterloo. And I mentioned pop culture as well. You know, you think about references to famous Americans, Lincoln or Washington. You think about references to pop stars, Lady Gaga or whoever's the current pop singer. You can make references and people connect with that. I mentioned Garfield as an example. Let me have a little fun with this. Bear with me. I enjoyed fooling around with things that are literary in nature. Well, here's a way to waste a couple of minutes. Here's an illusion. Tell me what famous literary individual is being mocked here, or at least having a little fun at his or her expense. The title is The Old Man and the Flea. Here we go. He had been bad. He knew that. He had been bad and peed on her bed, and in the end there was nothing anybody could do about it. She had yelled at him that time, screaming terrible things in that way women do when you have broken their trust and trampled on their hearts and urinated on their pillow. Bad dog, she'd said. He remembered it now. Bad dog. And he was a bad dog. A bad old dog with a cranky disposition and a weak bladder. It was at times like this that he feared life had no meaning. What was life anyway, but lying around on one's blankie waiting for the next bowl of kibble? Life was nothing. Nada. Nada y nada y pues nada. Woof nada. Then she came along and gave him a treat, and for a brief time, life was good. Then he puked the treat on the rug, and life was bad again. Well, it continues like that. Do you recognize a particular author's style? This is an interesting allusion, isn't it? It's not only the title, The Old Man and the Flea, take off of The Old Man and the Sea, but I like this style, the playing around with Ernest Hemingway, in case you didn't recognize that blunt, brief, short, staccato kind of style that you can associate with that. I'll skip some of these, won't take up all of our time. There are allusions. Somebody had this. These were state mottos, new state mottos. Now, again, I'll just take some time for a minute here, but we'll move on. North Carolina, what's their state motto? Or what should it be? Tobacco is a vegetable. Utah, our Jesus is better than your Jesus. Wisconsin, come cut the cheese. Arizona, but it's a dry heat. Connecticut, like Massachusetts, only the Kennedys don't own it yet. Florida, ask us about our grandkids. Indiana, 2 billion years, tidal wave free. Maine, we're really cold, but we have cheap lobster. Massachusetts, our taxes are lower than Sweden's. Okay, well, you got the idea there. How about this? These, I took this off the internet someplace, it's called The World's Shortest Books. So, again, some of these you'll have to recognize. I hope you recognize the allusions going on here. Things I Wouldn't Do for Money by Dennis Rodman. Al Gore, The Wild Years. Amelia Earhart's Guide to the Pacific Ocean. Dr. Kevorkian's Collection of Motivational Speeches. George Foreman's Big Book of Baby Names. How to Sustain a Musical Career by Art Garfunkel. Mike Tyson's Guide to Dating Etiquette. The Amish Phone Directory. Okay, so I hope you enjoyed some of those. Are there allusions in the Bible? Oh, yes. Let me give you some examples to think about. And again, you probably would be served well by getting a study Bible, because a study Bible takes a lot of the work out of this. It allows you to go right to the bottom of the page if a reference is being made, and you can see where it comes from and how it's being used. For example, let's take the New Testament. Jesus, the phrase that he most often referred to himself as was Son of Man. Now, he's not making this up. This is not something that he decided would be kind of a cute phrase. He's taking that from the book of Daniel. So you need to look at the book of Daniel, and you see that he's making a claim about himself. He also said, talking about the Son of Man coming on clouds of glory. That's from Daniel. Somebody once figured out the book of Revelation. Now, I've forgotten the statistics. I don't know if I wrote it down here anyplace, but how much of Revelation is alluding to the Old Testament? I might have it down here. No, I thought I did. I'm looking at the beginning of Revelation. But so much of it, people scratch their heads and say, I don't know what Revelation is talking about. Well, I'm with you. I think it's a very difficult book. But much of it is the Jews would have reacted far more favorably and more understanding of this book than we would, because he connects it to their past, to their literature, to their Old Testament. So much of that would be allusions. Let's take the book of Psalm. Here's Psalm 133. Very short psalm. I'm going to read it. How good and pleasant it is when brothers live together in unity. It's like precious oil poured on the head, running down on the beard, running down on Aaron's beard, down upon the collar of his robes. It's as if the dew of Hermon were falling on Mount Zion. For there the Lord bestows his blessing, even life forevermore. Now, there are several allusions going on in there. I want to come back to them, but one is something about precious oil being poured on Aaron and coming down his face onto his beard, and then a reference to Hermon and then Mount Zion. So we got several things going on here. What's this reference to Aaron's beard? Well, as you may guess, there was a special sacred anointing oil for official worship at the temple. So in other words, they're saying it's great when brothers live together in unity. It's like so uplifting. It's like having a religious church service where you pour this oil out to represent God's spirit, God's love, coming down over the chief priest, which would be Aaron. And that's the comparison being made. If you felt good seeing that happen, then you feel just as good when brothers live together in unity. And then there's a reference to Mount Hermon, as if the dew and all of the waters of Mount Hermon were actually falling on Mount Zion. Well, Mount Hermon's up to the north. It's a very high mountain, and it gets a lot of water, and it's actually the source of the Jordan River. And so it's saying, this is such a great situation when people are living together in unity. It's like refreshing rain has been moved from Mount Hermon, is pouring down over Mount Zion. Where's that? That would be Jerusalem. So a lot of allusions here that we might not get unless we had some footnotes to that. Well, that's just one example. What about Paul's letters? You can almost shut your eyes and just point, and that chapter that you point to is going to have some sort of allusion. For example, Paul calls Jesus the new Adam, and he expects you to understand the original story of Adam and Eve and the fall of man. Adam fell. Jesus does not fall. So we got the reference to Adam. We have references to Abraham. We have references to Sarah. We have references to all sorts of things in Paul's letters. You can just take a look and see. Let me take you more specifically to Song of Solomon or Song of Songs and let you see what's going on in there. Let's take Song of Solomon 4:11. Your lips drop sweetness as the honeycomb, my bride. Milk and honey are under your tongue. The fragrance of your garments is like that of Lebanon. Now today, you'd say, Lebanon, it strikes me as a hellhole, or it strikes me as a third world country, or it strikes me as a battleground, or it strikes me as a desert area. What's he talking about? Well, Lebanon at one time was known for having cedars, big trees, before the land got screwed up. And so the smell of those cedars is what he's referencing here. Let's stay in Song of Solomon. How about, let's see. Well, same thing, same chapter, chapter 4, verse 15. You are a garden fountain, a well of flowing water streaming down from Lebanon. So Lebanon in those days, can you see the allusion is to something good, something beautiful, something rich, something fertile. and he sees her this way as well. If we go over to chapter 7, same book, Song of Songs, he says, your neck, he's talking about this beautiful woman, your neck is like an ivory tower. Your eyes are the pools of Heshbon by the gate of Bath Rabim. Your nose is like the Tower of Lebanon looking toward Damascus. Not real positive. You probably don't get too far commenting and complimenting a woman that way today, but those all have references. Those are all allusions to places that people at that time would have said, oh, that's nice, that's beautiful. Let me go one other place. Let's take Jeremiah. Jeremiah 23. And I'm just being selective here. There's so many others. Jeremiah 23, 14. This is the prophet talking here, and he's putting it in poetry, which means highly emotionally. He wants people to really react to this. And among the prophets of Jerusalem, I have seen something horrible. They commit adultery and live a lie. They strengthen the hands of evildoers so that no one turns from his wickedness. They are all like Sodom to me. The people of Jerusalem are like Gomorrah. Well, you and I would hope, would recognize that the reference here is to these awful people that God wiped out way back in Genesis. And here he is making the reference to the people of Jeremiah's time. Let's go one New Testament one, just so you can see how Paul, for example, does do his references. I'm in Romans 5, verse 12. Remember how I talked about Jesus as the new Adam? Okay, this is Romans 5:12. Therefore, just as sin entered the world through one man, and death through sin, and in this way death came to all men because all sinned, for before the law was given, sin was in the world. But sin is not taken into account when there is no law. Nevertheless, death reigned from the time of Adam to the time of Moses, even over those who did not sin by breaking a command, as did Adam, who was a pattern of the one to come. Okay, the one to come. So do you hear all those Old Testament references there? Sin entered the world. What's he referencing? The fall of man. Before the law was given, what law is he talking about? The Mosaic law, the Ten Commandments, down in the time of Moses. Do you see Adam and Moses are both mentioned there? So, again, a Jewish individual reading this would connect so well with that, because that's part of his or her background. It's just part of them. They've heard so much of that. Okay, well, I think what I'll do, I'm going long on this one as far as just allusion, but I have fun with it, so I hope you don't mind some of the silly ones that I did as well. Allusions. Tremendous ways of getting information across in a short form. Again, remember, we're talking especially poetry, but any kind of literature that wants to pack as much meaning, as much emotion, as much content into the least number of words possible will often use allusions. Once again, there's not really a shortcut. Well, sure, you can go online and just type in famous allusions and you can sit there and try to memorize them, but my challenge to you is it's far better to actually do a lot of reading, to understand some of the classics, to know a little bit of history. Pick up a book, a dummy's guide to whatever, fill in the blank, history or literature or whatever, science, things like that. There's a book out a while back called Cultural Illiteracy. See if you can find a copy of that book. In the back, he has tons of these allusions. The author, Hirsch, H-I-R-S-C-H, I believe, could be H-I-R-S-H. Hirsch went around to different departments on college campuses and said, what would be the terms that you think an educated person should know by the time he or she finishes college? And so he put that whole list together. So it's from science, it's from history, it's from philosophy, it's from religious classes, all sorts of things, English, different things that he's cultivated and put together. So the book's called Cultural Illiteracy. It's been out of, well, I don't know if it's out of print, but it was an older book, but you can probably find a copy of it someplace. But get used to allusions. Use them yourself. Try them out. How do you feel right now? What's your next, whatever, your next semester going to be like if you're a student? How about how you see American society, your sports ability, how your brain operates? I mean, you can do any of these things. How you drive. Right, you can have a good time with these things, and they lighten your language up. People will be impressed. It shows that you're clever, you're imaginative, and it will do what I said before. It'll provide a brief but powerful choice that allows the reader to bring his or her own knowledge to what you're talking about as well. So that's illusion. Next time we'll tackle, and I promise to go a little faster, we'll do apostrophes, and maybe we'll do apostrophes, personification, hyperbole, and put them all together and wrap up poetry.